I'd like to also acknowledge Doug Hickson and getting out of any presentations at this conference. He was my major professor at Wyoming, so hopefully I can learn some of that. People ask me all the time, how do I like it in Nebraska since I moved back? And I said, I like it. And I'm beginning to worry, though, because the UNL system has very high expectations of their employees, as evidenced by the recent situation with a football coach. So now when somebody asks me how I like it in Nebraska, I respond, what have you heard? Okay, today I'm going to talk about three different topics, and I would like to bring up the first slide and acknowledge Gene Deitcher, because Gene was the person who began the first two projects I'm going to talk about. It was involved in collecting some additional data and analyzing this data on target weights and target dates of breeding heifers, and looking through the literature to find some of the, I guess, recommendations on target weights. There isn't a lot out there. But I think somewhere hidden in a cave, maybe, on a stone tablet, it says develop your heifers to 65% of mature weight. Because a lot of the data that's cited that we're going by as an industry is off this study. This study was conducted in the early 90s, or published in the early 90s, and looking at developing replacement females to either 55 or 65% of mature weight, and you can see where the yellow color indicates those are statistical differences, and there was lower conception rates in the first 21 days, more calving difficulty, and a lower breed back. But that is when that study was concluded, and there were 60 animals per treatment. It was only done 1 year. So, recent research, or not so recent, there's some people in here, I think, that started some of this. We accepted that two-thirds of mature weight is where we needed to be, and now we were going to focus on how do we get there. And there's three different programs here, a fast gain, an even gain, and a slow, then a faster gain. And Don Clanton, who was at North Platte for several years, found no difference in age at puberty or conception rate or calf performance. Next year, some more recent work, the even versus late gain, no difference in performance, but the late gain, they did it with 12% less feed. Well, this work that Dr. Deitcher began really challenged some of the current recommendations in the beef industry as to what is the appropriate target weight. And he designed a study, it actually was a 3-year study, using Mark II heifers, which, I don't know if you all know, but they're half British, half continental, and there was about 80 per year, 40 per treatment per year, and 120 total in each treatment. They were developed either 55 or 60% of mature weight. They had a 45-day breeding season, and the data, that some of which I was involved in collecting, was through the fourth pregnancy diagnosis. Now, this is in your proceedings. It's a busy table, but the differences, again, are in yellow. There was a difference in gain, as you would expect, in development. Pre-breeding weight was different. Condition score was. Cycling was different. More were cycling at the beginning of the breeding season. No difference in pregnancy in 45 days. Pre-calving weight was heavier, and the heifers developed to a higher weight. No difference in body condition or calf birth weight. Now, it's important in any of these studies to look at the rebreeding, because maybe you can get these heifers pregnant the first time, but maybe you have a wreck with calving difficulty or rebreeding, but that was not evident. The calving difficulty was not different. Weaning weight, calf gain, adjusted 205-day weight, all were not different. One interesting thing that came out of both of these studies, I think, these heifers developed to a lighter weight at first breeding, every time they were weighed on their fall preg check, were lighter. I think there's potential for some management things that we can do to lower mature weight through heifer development, if that needs to be done. Condition score at weaning was a little bit higher with the higher developed heifers, but look through the second through the fourth pregnancy data. No difference. And I would say acceptable. So in this study, they decreased cost $22 a head. No differences in pregnancy rate, no differences in calf production, which would indicate milk production probably was not affected, even though it wasn't directly measured. And the decreased mature weight through the fourth pregnancy, which probably isn't a bad thing if the other production factors are not affected. But is this something we can go across the country and say, yes, you can do this in all situations, in every environment, under every genetic group of animals? Probably not, because that other data does exist. These are crossbred heifers, and as you heard yesterday in several of the genetics talks, crossbreeding is a very powerful tool to use to increase reproductive performance. These cattle were very well adapted to their environment. Now, there's a reason we don't raise these things in Nebraska, and there's a reason they do in Alaska, and it's because of the genetic environment interactions. The second study I'd like to talk about is some other work Gene did, looking at when the appropriate time to calve heifers for a June calving herd. You saw a lot of the data from the June calving herd earlier this morning in Don Adams' presentation, and some of the challenges. Now, when we look at return to estrus in heifers, this is some padlock data, and probably Matt Cherney put this together. There's probably 14 or 15,000 observations in this data set, but saw that these 2 and 3 year olds do take longer to cycle back. So a common management practice that a lot of you do is what? You breed your heifers earlier, right? Well, another situation, and this is a slide from Don Adams. Again, you saw it earlier this morning. If we're going to calve in June, what are nutrient values doing in our forage in that recovery period to rebreeding? They're going down pretty drastically. So maybe there is some advantage in calving these June calvers earlier. They get better nutrients before they're expected to breed back again in a longer postpartum interval. So that was the question. It was a 3-year study again with the June calving herd, 50 each year, so 25 per treatment each year. Developed, and these animals were developed to both reach 60% of mature weight at their given breeding date. They were either put with bulls August or September 5th for a May or June calving date. And again, the data was collected through the fourth pregnancy. This slide table is in your proceedings as well. The winter gain had to be different, obviously, if we're going to get to a mature weight earlier, a 60%, 1.5 versus 1.2 pounds of gain. Pre-breeding weight, though, was heavier in the June calvers. These heifers were put out on grass about May, and they weren't bred again until either August or September. And those animals, the June, that were developed slower during the winter period were actually heavier at breeding. Cycling before the breeding season, no difference. 45-day pregnancy rate, no difference. Pre-calving weight wasn't different, and condition score and birth weight were not different. What about some of the calving data? This is an interesting phenomenon that I can't explain, I guess. Why do these June calvers calve unassisted when birth weight's the same? There's a lot of factors involved, I would guess, but they have very little calving difficulty with these later calving animals, even though birth weight is similar. The pelvic area was a little bit larger on these June calvers, but I doubt that explains for this amount of difference in calving difficulty. Actual weaning weight, as you might expect, was lower in the June calvers. They were obviously a month younger. Calf gain was lower in the June calvers. Adjusted 205 date was lower. So if we look at the calf data, you're giving some up here. Now, from a systems approach, what's going to be done with these calves? They're probably too light and too young to go into a calf-fed program, so they're probably going to be held over till yearlings. Is this weight going to be made up? What's the economics here? That's something that I think would be very important to look at. Cow weight at weaning wasn't different. Body condition at weaning wasn't different. Second calf pregnancy rate is, I guess, in my opinion, too low. These animals were supplemented in the first set of heifers developed. They were supplemented during the breeding season and in the subsequent 2 years, both before and after the breeding season. But again, we need to probably be above that 80% pregnancy rate. But this is a function of the nutrients that are out there when we're trying to breed in August or September on Sandhills Range. The third and fourth pregnancy was not statistically different. So in summary of this study, we lowered costs $11 a head, and those heifers developed to calve later. No difference in pregnancy rate. Decreased calving difficulty, that's got to be a plus. Decreased calf weaning weight and adjusted to a five-day weight though. And tended again in these heifers, and the data I showed you didn't really show that, but the subsequent weights, mature weight at pregnancy diagnosis was lower, and those heifers developed on a lower rate of gain. Okay, the next part of my talk is some current work I have going on, both at Goodmanson Sandhills Laboratory near Whitman and also at North Platte, on fat supplementation. And the million-dollar question that Brett Hess is also going to address after me is, does fat supplementation improve reproductive efficiency? And obviously in this picture, these deer supposedly... This picture was taken down near Arapaho after these deer were seen grazing in a soybean field about an hour earlier, so in some cases it can have a pretty immediate effect. I'm not going to go into great detail on some of the reported benefits. I know Brett will, but there has been positive reproductive effects associated with supplemental fat independent of energy. And some of these have been in pregnancy rates, duration of anestrus period, and in calf vigor. Well, my major interest in this research is in heifer development, and we know that heifers that conceive early in the breeding season have a greater lifetime productivity, so it's an advantage to get those pregnant early. Fat supplemented heifers, this is a study that was done at Fort Keogh. There's very few studies that have been conducted with heifer development. But in this study, they had a diet by sire breed interaction where fat was fed in the form of safflower for an extended period of time during development. But the interesting thing, they had three sire breeds, Hereford, Limousin, and Piedmontese. And the ones that they saw the benefit of fat supplementation was in the Piedmontese, a very lean animal. So is there a different genetic requirement for some of these dietary fats or fatty acids? I did some work when I was in Montana, and this study involved over 1,000 head of heifers feeding sunflowers, whole sunflower seeds, to heifers before we AI'd them, either 30 or 60 day period, and we really did not see any benefit. There's been some current work, and really I guess my interest is more, and I think Brett will point out too, there's been some data coming out now that would show, not always positive, sometimes no effect, but there is a potential for some negative effects of fat supplementation. In this study with heifer development and linoleic acid, what does linoleic acid do in human nutrition, or conjugated linoleic acid, to fat deposition in humans? It decreases fat, right? CLAs decrease fat. Now, if we feed something high in linoleic acid, like sunflower seeds, what's it going to do to fat in heifers? And that was the question these scientists asked. And they did see a higher conjugated linoleic acid level in the tissue in the high-fat diet. They saw leptin and insulin not being affected, which are two hormones that are associated with reproduction, as is insulin-like growth factor 1. Cholesterol, as you might expect, was increased because of fat supplementation. And here they did not see any difference in puberty. So it did not have a detrimental effect, even though it affected conjugated linoleic acid. The jury's out, I think, still about what fat source do we need to feed that we might expect the biggest effect. Now, several people have summarized the literature, as I have written a couple papers in this subject, but the plant-derived fatty acids appear at least to, if there's going to be effect, at least have an advantage over some of the saturated fats that we find in animal products. We know Nebraska raises a lot of soybeans, and when soybeans are $7 a bushel, there probably aren't a lot of people feeding them to their cattle, as they probably shouldn't be, but in cases where they're less expensive, they can be a pretty economical protein or energy source. The area of interest I have, though, is there potential for problem in feeding whole soybeans? And supposedly, and this data is not published, so it's one of the reasons for doing this work, some Missouri people did a project where they fed whole soybeans, and supposedly the longer they fed them, the bigger problem they had with reproduction. And some anecdotal data from veterinarians, possibly soybeans having a negative effect on reproduction. Why could this possibly be? Well, from the human literature and things you see with tofu and some of the soy proteins on supplementation and positive effects in women, well, why is that happening? Well, these soybeans contain phytoestrogens. And they're probably, at least in humans, not acting like estrogen, but they're blocking estrogen from doing the bad things it does. So this was an analysis of the phytoestrogens in the soybeans that I fed. I'm going to show you briefly three studies looking at soybean supplementation in heifer diets of different physiological maturity, and to look at inconsistencies or try to sort out, is there a problem feeding whole beans in animals of different maturity? If we think of the estrogens, Ralgo is a phytoestrogen, isn't it? Zearalenol. What happens when we implant heifers at the wrong time? This is an analogy I like to use. Maybe at a older maturity, it's not going to cause a problem. There might be critical times that these might be affected. We wanted to look at cycling, synchronization, conception, pregnancy rate. This first study was with 104 heifers. I didn't get to start them until 10 months of age. They were weighing 660 pounds. They were fed 3 pounds of whole beans in a total mixed ration, which was 4% added fat, and it was fed for 110 days through the synchronization period. These were the diets. They were isocaloric and isonitrogenous, equal in energy and protein. I won't spend a lot of time with that. They were synchronized with MGA prostaglandin given on day 19, AI, and bulls placed with them for 60-day breeding season, 10 days after the last AI, and then we ultrasounded them for pregnancy. Well, what did we see? First of all, this will go back to that other work that Gene did. These heifers were 10 months of age, and we pulled two blood samples before to see how many were cycling. Look how many of these heifers were cycling. Over 80%. So again, this may support some of these ideas about physiological maturity. Probably is happening sooner. Maybe these cattle from the original recommendations. And these were heifers that were bought from 5 different ranchers out of the Sand Hills near Arthur. So I think it had a pretty good cross-section of some of the genetics that's out there. No difference in cyclicity in the middle of the period or the time of prostaglandin. But this was interesting, I thought. The control animals, we detected 96% of them in estrus. The soybeans, 81%. And of those that did show estrus, they were delayed. The whole soybean-fed heifers were 3.2 days and 2.9 versus the control. So we delayed estrus and we lowered synchronization rate. And we probably should have stopped here. So when we look at, okay, now we have conception to AI, 72% on the control and 81% on the soybeans. So those heifers that did cycle were very fertile. We didn't have enough numbers to show a statistical difference here. But then you look at the blue bar in the center, that indicates AI pregnancy, which is the percent of the total that were exposed to synchronization, no difference. And at the end of the breeding season, no difference. Well, what happens if we feed them to less mature animals at an earlier weight and hopefully a lot less cycling? This study is being repeated. It was done at the Goodmanson Ranch, and thank you to all the crew back here, even though as much grief as they give me all the time, for helping out a lot doing this study, really. These heifers were 470 pounds, 9 months of age. They were fed free choice, average quality meadow hay, about 9% protein, and then a supplement which was either 3 pounds of beans ground with a pound of corn or 4 pounds of distiller's grains. And they were fed for 161 days, so a long period. We did, though, before they were turned, these were not AI'd, before they were turned with the bulls, I synchronized them with 2 shots of prostaglandin 14 days apart. And then we went in 60 hours after the second injection and did ultrasound-guided follicular aspiration. So basically, we went in and we sucked out the follicular fluid of the dominant follicle. Because we wanted to look more closely at what might be going on to affect this synchronization rate and this estrus response. The ultrasound machine there in that dark circle is the dominant preovulatory follicle, which we aspirated. We found no difference in estrus activity due to treatment, but at the beginning of this study, and these heifers were 9 months, 32% were cycling. And by the middle of the period, nearly 84%. And no difference in pregnancy rates. However, you know, a numerical increase or advantage to the soybean heifers. But again, there's 25 animals per treatment. This is only 2 animals. It is not statistically different. But does not seem to be negative. And these animals were bull bred. And this aspiration does not hurt fertility, by the way. We are going to analyze the follicular fluid for estrogen and androstenedione to see if there are, which is a measure of follicular health. We did take follicular diameter measurements of the preovulatory follicle. And in this, again, probably due to numbers, not statistically different, but numerically higher, larger follicular size with the soybean group. The third study, we looked at animals that should be puberal. I apologize, I do not have the progesterone data today to assure you they were, but I believe they would have all cycled, to look at feeding the same supplements to animals that had already reached puberty. They were individual fed in these crates. There were only 20 animals, 10 per treatment, weighed almost 800 pounds. These heifers came from the ranch, and again, the same supplements. Again, we set them up with 2 shots of prostaglandin. We're going to look at the aspirates for estrogen and androstenedione. But again, we saw an increase in follicular diameter of the heifers that were fed soybeans. We did not breed these animals. They were sold. So we're interested in the follicular characteristics. It does not appear that feeding whole beans is going to cause a wreck, at least from these 3 studies. We did see a decrease in synchronization rate and a delayed time of estrus. But again, the AI conception pregnancy data was not different because of a numerical increase in the heifers fed whole beans. And we'll see about the follicular dynamics. Another study that came out in October, I believe, which is the only other study I'm aware of where they fed whole beans for an extended period of time. They only fed 2% added fat, but for 113 days. And they stopped feeding these a week before MGA. So they weren't fed for 33 days before they AI'd them, right? The treatments there are control, a whole cottonseed treatment, soybean, and soy hull. No difference in percent puberal. Now, they only had 24 animals for treatment, but the whole soybean group was 20 percentage points higher than the control, so it sure didn't look like it hurt them. And this, again, was about half the level of fat that I was feeding. They needed more numbers to be able to pull out any differences, but it doesn't appear that these whole soybeans are causing a wreck in these heifers fed for long periods of time. We're repeating both of these studies again this year. And again, with purchased heifers out of the sandhills, so genetics that I think should well represent what's out there from 5 different ranches. And that's all I have.